Welcome to the Locked On Cavs podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Joining me today, filling in for Evan Damrell, is Danny Cunningham from ESPN 850 and WKYC in Cleveland. On today's show, we're going to talk about Cavs Nets. We're going to talk about maybe the chances of the Cavs keeping their draft pick this year. And Danny's got a take on roster building that we're going to dive into. That's all on today's show.
Cavs need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down. Ground. Here goes Okoro to the bucket. And oh my, Okoro throws it down. 10 seconds to go. Here comes Colin Sexton. Sexton chased by Hill. Off to Stevens. Oh my. 45 ticks to go. That shot is blocked by Nance.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Prince knocks down that Harden pass. Garland's there. Garland upstairs for Allen. Oh, look out.
There you go. That's called team ball right there.
All right, thanks as always for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Danny, a busy sports day here in the world.
Crazy
the
Masters sports you day.
You and I are both in on the Masters. The Guardians are back. They did just lose to the Royals, but it was an entertaining game. We'll see where this season kind of goes. But what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. Like you said, busy sports day. Just watching Tiger Woods walk Augusta. There's nothing like it.
No. There's nothing quite like it. I'm like really excited for baseball this year. I don't know if it's like the name change has really invigorated me in a certain way. I don't know if the fact that the Ramirez extension has kind of got me a little like
I know this
excited.
I know this is Locked On Cavs and not Locked On Guardians, but man, I think if they did not agree to terms with Ramirez on an extension, things would have been really dark for this team.
It wouldn't have been fun,
no,
I'll tell you that. And now
been.
I'm thinking it would not have been fun. Go check out Locked On Guardians with Jeff Ellis if you want some good baseball analysis. But Danny, we're going to talk today first about Cavs Nets. We're going to talk about the Cavs maybe keeping their pick depending on how the season ends. And then we're going to get to roster building at the end here. But let's start with Cavs Nets. Don't have a betting line on this yet. This is just, I think, a massive game. There's no other way for us to put this. This is a game that if they want to control their destiny down the stretch, or they have to go to Brooklyn, they have to win. It seems like Evan Mobley is going to be a game-time decision. We'll see if he plays or not. We'll see what he looks like if he plays or not. The Cavs did not practice on Thursday, so we didn't get to pepper JB Bickerstaff with questions about this. We didn't, you know, get our version of the Kawhi Leonard videos from the other day where he's, you know, say like waving everybody, whatever, with Mobley or Jared Allen. So like we don't exactly know right now like what this sort of looks like aside from what has sort of been reported. We don't have anything on the record from the team about what's going on there, and I think there is something to be said for that with what's going on here, and we'll see where this goes. But Danny, what are you looking for? Cavs Nets Friday night in Brooklyn. What are you looking
for? I mean, first of all, I'm looking for a much better effort than what we saw on Tuesday in Orlando against the Magic. I was so disappointed in what we saw in that game because, you know, I went to the game on Sunday where they lost to Philadelphia and they put forth a really strong effort. They lost to a better team and they certainly weren't done any favors by that officiating crew, and then we know JB Bickerstaff picked up a $15,000 fine for his post-game comments about the matter. And I was like, okay, they get it. And then to see them come out and lay an egg on Tuesday night, I thought was a really disappointing response to all of that happened over the weekend. I expected better out of this team. And it's a frustrating thing because it wasn't like they were going to lock up everything, but they would have put themselves in a much, much better chance. But losing that game is inexcusable. And now we're going to see how they respond to that. And it's no easy task doing it against Brooklyn. I know Brooklyn hasn't been really as great since Kyrie Irving's been allowed to play every game, which I think that there's probably something to be said about him playing himself back into real basketball shape as opposed to playing once every 8 days basketball shape, which
seems harder.
Who could have guessed? You know, it's harder to play
three
times a week.
Who could have thought? Yeah.
But yeah. It's still, anytime Kevin Durant's on the floor, you have to be terrified as an opponent. We saw that, you know, they were down by, what, 21, I want to say, against the Knicks the other night, and they came back and won that game. Watching that score didn't feel too good when you see, wait, Brooklyn won? After you kind of penciled in a Knicks win. So it's the biggest game of the season for the Cavs. Having Evan Mobley back would be a big boost to them, but I don't know what it's fair to expect out of him coming off that injury to his ankle. So we'll kind of see. I just overall, I am needing to see a much better effort and recognizing the stakes of this game for this team.
Yeah, look, this is a game that if the Cavs are able to win it, it gives them some breathing room and maybe holding on to the seventh seed, giving them, or even if they slide to eight in that situation, gives them some wiggle room to get out of the play-in tournament. Right now, they are not there. A game up on Brooklyn, a game up on Atlanta, 2.5 games up on Charlotte. If the Cavs lose to the Nets, they will slide to eight immediately, just due to the fact that they will no longer have the tiebreaker, and they don't have the tiebreaker against Atlanta, and I don't know exactly when Atlanta plays next. I'm going to check that as we're talking here, but like, they don't have the tiebreaker against Atlanta either. Atlanta also plays tomorrow against Miami, so like, the Cavs could slide here. If they lose and Atlanta beats Miami, they slide down to nine.
Yeah, I think I want to say the only team in this, you know, scenario they'd have the tiebreaker over is Charlotte, and that basically goes on conference record, where Charlotte, I don't know what they are now. When I checked the other day, they were 24-24, and they tied 2-2 in the regular season matchup.
Look, and I think the effort point, I think the point about like what they look like coming off of that game, I think is the whole thing here, right? Like, this season to me is still, you know, even when it was at its peak, I think it was still a learning season for this group. Like, this wasn't, okay, we're now a contender, let's like maximize that. I understand if some people are disappointed in how it's petered. I think it's fair to say the team is disappointed. I think it's been frustrating, as like covering them with some empathy, that it's been, seeing how it's kind of unraveled has been a little bit frustrating. They've certainly not been as fun and dynamic to cover over these last couple weeks. But if you follow like just an absolute dud of a performance up, and you don't show up for this game, like I would expect, like, I just, what is that? I don't know what that says about them. I don't know what it says about like the messaging to the, like, there's a lot that will be hard to like parse, but it just won't feel like, it'll feel like a very sour note, as the season has had a lot of sour notes of late, right? With the Mobley injury, with the Allen injury, it would just feel like another one of those things that kind of take some of the shine off of what has been a step forward for this franchise, no question. But the last couple weeks have just been so rough that I expect them to lose, frankly. Like, they're going to be underdogs in this game. Like, it's KD and Kyrie and everything that Brooklyn does. Like, and it's in Brooklyn. Like, the Cavs will be underdogs. Their odds are they're going to lose this game. But let's see what the competitive aspect of it looks like. Let's see what kind of energy we get from them going forward here to set up a game against Milwaukee in the regular season finale.
Yeah, I think it's fair to be disappointed, but I also think when having this conversation with people, I also have to kind of remind myself what we expected about this team in early October, November. You know, we were in training camp, the start of the regular season, they got out to that hot start, and really since Ricky Rubio's injury, they've been basically a 500 team, which still would have wildly exceeded my expectations. You know, a 500 team is a 40-plus win team. I thought they'd be lucky to win 32 games. I thought they'd be lucky to avoid 50 losses, and they very clearly have done that. So I think that that's something that we do have to keep in mind, where, yeah, the end of the season is not what we all dreamed of when they were sitting at 20-14 or just, you know, a smidge outside of the top seed in the East in the month of January, and all those great things and great feelings that we had about this team. We have to remember what was expected of this team at certain points too.
Just for the official injury report, now Jared Allen is listed as out. Evan Mobley is listed as questionable. I think the first question to be asked to Jimmy Bickerstaff when he speaks to the media before Friday's game is, how much was Evan Mobley able to do in practice? And he will probably not give an answer, but it is the question that will tell you what you expect of Mobley. Because if he's gone through some 5-on-5 stuff, if he's gone through anything that is simulated game action, you should probably feel a little bit better about what he's going to be able to provide coming off the ankle sprain. Okay, we're going to go to break. Two quick notes about what's going on with the team, just so you people, little news things. RJ Nembhard was waived on Thursday, and Linkomer Oscar, the team CEO, is stepping down. He's going to take another role within the broader whatever company universe. It's not really pertinent to this team, but it's worth noting in the structure of the news of the day. Okay, after the break, we're going to talk about the Cavs keeping their pick, and if that comes to pass, if it's a good thing or a bad thing to some degree. But first, going to tell everyone about BetOnline. BetOnline.net is the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, including this week's Master Championship odds, podcasts, and reviews for all the different leagues this season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. For instance, right now, you can go bet on the Lakers' next head coach, where David Fizdale is currently the favorite at minus 300, Quinn Snyder is plus 450, and Doc Rivers is plus 475. Or, if you're in the WNBA, you can bet on the title odds with the Connecticut Sun, currently a betting favorite at plus 350, and the Las Vegas Aces, now coach by Becky Hammon, are next at plus 375. Head to the website today, or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. That's BetOnline. That's where the game starts. All right, Danny Cunningham from ESPN 850 and WKYC is with me today. All right, Danny, so here's my take on this the draft pick possibility. I don't think it is, like, the optimal thing to happen. I think I would rather this group get the seven-game experience, even if they play Boston in round one, let's say, it get wrecked in four games. I think it would benefit them to go through that process, for Darius to go through that, for Moby to go through that, for Jared to go through that in this context, for them to get a look at Okoro and Stevens and guys like that in that context. It would be really worth it. I also understand the argument that if they, you know, because the pick will be going to Indiana probably next year, if it doesn't go to them this year, that, you know, it complicates when you can trade future first-round picks to make other moves. I think that is fair. I also just look at this and say, you know what? Like, at some point in these next couple of years, I think it would probably be helpful to them to get probably a wing, because they need
definitely
wings.
A wing.
And get one on a rookie contract, develop them, and have them on this more cost-controlled situation to build this roster out as it gets going. The Cavs are not going to be a team like Memphis that has cap space, or like Oklahoma City that can, like, absorb other stuff to get guys they want or whatever. This also isn't like the NFL, where, like, if you have a really good quarterback on a rookie deal, you can then, like, spend crazy everywhere else and build out your roster. This will not give you that same benefit. It doesn't work quite the same way. But the same, I think, kind of cost logic sort of applies if you can find that impact player. That is easier said than done, certainly. Like, you can miss in the back end of the lottery, you know, just as pretty easily. That happens.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there could be some benefit if they take a shot at, like, Wendell Moore or Malachi Branham or someone, like, in that 10 to 20 something range. If they get that guy this year, there is some benefit to that, even if it is not the optimal.
Well, I think you're one. I want to state that I'm very much on the get the playoff experience and convey the pick. Like, that is the side I take. I think the playoff experience is much more valuable than adding a wing. Now, if that wing would turn into someone like Kawhi Leonard, obviously I would eat my words, but I just don't foresee that being the case. And I think that should be priority number one. But I also wonder how not conveying the pick this year, if they end up, you know, in the play-in, obviously, and lose and end up in the lottery, how does that affect their ability to operate in the future? That is something I'm very curious about. And I think it's a conversation worth having. Obviously, they're not going to tank the play-in games so that they keep their pick. They want to win the play-in games. They want to be in the playoffs. That's exactly what they should do. But it could complicate things down the road. And I think that now, at the time they made this trade, there could not be any thinking from Kobe Altman, oh, this isn't going to convey this year. We're going to have this pick. There's no way that was going through his mind at the time, and it certainly shouldn't have. The Cavs were in a much better spot when they traded for LeVert than they are in present day.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. There's probably like a 2% of the scenarios you're thinking of at that time, or something very minuscule. You're thinking, okay, maybe we're still obviously going to do draft scouting. You know, they're going to go look at guys. Like, you're going to do your job, but you're probably thinking, okay, we're going to have a pick that we'll use next year, and then you can obviously trade that pick. You can draft one and draft none, and then trade the rights to that player, and still functionally trade it, but you can't trade it, you know, ahead of time, which makes it harder to grease some wheels. Mm-hmm. I think I'm 100% with you with, I think the play-in thing matters. I think about this, that if that is how it turns out, and that will be a disappointment. Let's, like, just say this cleanly. That will be a disappointing end of the season. That will be a bummer of the end of the season. I don't think Darius Garland or Evan Mobley or Jared Allen or any of these guys give a shit about them keeping
their draft. Should they.
They don't care.
Why should they?
Nor should they. JB Bickerstaff should not care. The fans, frankly, like, if you're a fan, you shouldn't give a shit either. Me selfishly covering this team, me having to do draft prep for, like, late lottery guys is, like, I've got, like, a list of names that I've gotten from our lockdown experts, and that's about as far as I've gone so far, because I'm putting it off until I have to do, like, a 6-week crash course on, like, thinking about this and, like, developing whatever opinions I can in that time, right? Like, it's a little different than last year when, like, I was making time to watch Mobley, watching G League Ignite games, like, watching Cade. Like, I was doing that stuff because I needed to.
Well, right? And you knew, okay, one of these guys is going to be on the Cavs. So we don't know who it could be. You know, Jalen Suggs could be Jalen Green, could have been Cade, could have been Evan Mobley as it was, could have been Scotty Barnes.
Could have been Scotty Barnes, yeah.
But you knew, okay, they're going to be bad enough to get one of these guys. Now you're like, well, this has been so far out of mind that who would have thought that, you know, there is a world that exists where the Cavs draft Chet Holmgren and they start 4 7-footers next year. And I know we'll get to roster construction, but that world exists.
Well, the interesting thing is it would be that chaos scenario, which is like obviously very unlikely. It would be a very, if they fall out into the lottery, they will have a minuscule chance of leaping all the way to the top. But if they did, like having a high draft pick would be the chaos
scenario.
And
Chris,
it would be.
It has happened before.
I remember being on TweetDeck and seeing when they got the Anthony Bennett pick, and I couldn't keep – I had the TV on and saw that they got the Bennett pick and then was scrolling through TweetDeck seeing it, and I couldn't keep up because people were just, like, laughing and having, like, the chaos. And then I remember them getting the Wiggins thing, and then, like, obviously you go back to the Kyrie thing.
Number one picks they got were chaos because – the Kyrie year, they were terrible. They were one of the worst teams in the league, but their own pick didn't win the lottery. The Clippers pick did, which didn't have a great chance of doing so.
No. Their pick was Tristan Thompson in that draft. I firmly believe that, which probably makes me a little more, I think you'd probably be fine if you get the pick. It's maybe not exactly what you want, but you could probably make it work. You still have the option to trade the rights to that player if there's someone that you take that you could then flip in another deal, right? I think the other part of it is I do think that part of the Cavs' success and how high the ceiling of this group ends up being and what kind of success they can have the next 5 years will be on, okay, how do they find other talent and develop it and find other talent to support your core, right? Because their financial situation will just be tricky to manage. It just is. The Colin Sexton this contract will eat into the cap. Jared Allen's making 20 already. You know, Kevin's in the last year of his contract next year, but then as his contract comes off, Darius's max is going to kick in. You have to figure out what's going on with Caris LeVert. Mobley, you're planning for that max extension
already.
Now, like, just bank on it being a thing in a couple of years. You are going to have to at some point find ways to develop guys. I mean, much less what happens with Okoro and when he becomes extension eligible and how you run that into RFA, probably, I would guess at this point. And, you know, Lamar Stevens, will, like, if you believe in him, how much of a pay bump do you want to give him when his deal kind of runs out? And how do you manage that? Like, there are tricky things to manage. And yes, the cap is going to go up. Dan Gilbert is the second richest owner in sports. He has the money to spend. He does. That's
the least of my concern is having money to pay these guys.
Yeah,
the cap is a concern, but like the actual cash is not a worry.
Yeah. No. So like if the Cavs do decide like, hey, we want to spend to maximize this, like they will have the financial wherewithal to do so. That is very clear. I think it will still be we've seen that there is probably a limit on how much owners will spend. Like they're rich for a reason because they're not going to just blow everything on this. They just won't. And look, they're rich. Whatever, their money.
Yeah.
You will have to find a way, I think, to add some young talent. Like, and whether it's like something like where it's this year, like a late lottery pick. Whether it's finding your version of Bones Highland, someone like Kuminga who's come along for the Warriors of late, right? Like that's the kind of thing I think that, along with finding guys through the G League, guys through undrafted free agency, like that. Those are going to be the things that you know. They're not going to be the deciding factor, I think, of what the Cavs do, but how they handle these situations and being prepared for them and maximizing them, I think we'll just have a clear impact on the next couple years. It's just unavoidable with the amount of there. It's just going to be roster turnover. Well, like that's going to happen. There are three guys locked in, and there's a lot of other change that's going to probably.
Well, and I know we're going to get into roster construction in a minute here, but this is kind of snowballs into that discussion where what are you going to do with the limited resources you do have financially in terms of cap space at certain points? Because Darius Garland's a max player. There's no doubting that at this point. Evan Mobley, we already know, is a max player, as we already mentioned. So you're already hamstringing yourself. And, you know, it is a gamble. If this pick doesn't convey and you nail it, it could be the moment that, okay, the Cavs went from a team with a really fun team with a relatively strong upside to, if you nail this pick, it's the difference between maybe winning a title in 3 years or not.
Yeah. You have the second round pick this year, finding a guy there that even if it's a guy that doesn't play right away, that you can develop with the Cleveland Charge in the G League.
Yeah.
Like that's why that is worth investing money in, because even if the guy is out of sight, out of mind for a year and he comes back in year two from summer league and looks good and looks improved and you've done your job in developing that guy, that's useful. And again, this is not exactly one-to-one the same as like the NFL, because I think we see guys come in the NFL and you know, make instant impacts. But that development, that benefit of the really affordable contract just is something to think about. It's not like the fun thing to talk about, but it's part of the thing.
Okay, after the break, discussion, you're right. Yeah. It's not, you know, this isn't glamorous, but it has to be mentioned.
No, it just, like, especially again, because they have this money coming. They have lots of money coming for guys. Like, it's just part of how they rolled into LeBron into this era, that they have some financial stuff to manage as they go forward. Okay, after the break, we're going to talk about roster building. Danny has a take on this that I can't wait to hear right after this. All right, back here with Danny Cunningham from WKYC and ESPN 850, where you can hear him every weekday with Matt Fontana. Danny, you've got a take on roster building. Go off, King.
So I was very uncertain during the summer when they traded for Lauri Markkanen. It's like, oh, they're going to play 3 7-footers all at once. I don't understand how this is going to work. I didn't believe in it. And I was very clearly wrong because that has worked very well for them. They've proven me wrong, and we don't necessarily need to rehash that. And I also understand that injuries very much play a factor into why this team has taken the slide that it has taken. But I also think it's worth thinking about how much more of a difficult spot does this team put itself in with the injury variable, because they play such a distinct style of basketball that they really can't repeat with anyone else, right? Like, you have Evan Mobley, who we saw earlier in the season, they would play that 3-2 zone that Minnesota used to play with Kevin Garnett way back in the day, where Evan Mobley was playing that Kevin Garnett role at the top of the key, where he's, you know, causing havoc on the perimeter, which you don't see a lot of 7-footers do. And no one can repeat that, where they can't play 3 7-footers on the floor when Jarrett Allen's out for a couple weeks or Evan Mobley is out for a couple weeks as well. And I understand that 7-footers are limited. Like, not everyone is just 7 feet tall, but it also has to drastically change the style that they play. And I wonder if that is the best strategy in protecting yourself in case, you know, one of those guys does go down. And yes, I realize that in a star-driven league, so much is if your best player goes down, you're kind of screwed anyways. But does it make sense to create a style that you can't repeat if just because that certain body type isn't available to you?
Yeah, I think I would go, I would agree with that, but I would go in a slightly different direction. I think the Cavs have shown this year that their A plan worked pretty well, right? I think that's true. I think the problem is that they don't have a lot of other looks.
Sure.
Like, Markkanen, the thing with Markkanen that I think holds me back from being very just comfortable with the money and kind of sure that you can continue to do what you're going to do with him is that, like, you cannot, like, play, like, it. The offensive numbers with him as a small ball five of late are crazy. The defensive numbers are atrocious.
Well, like,
he can't really be a small ball five. He just can't. And that's a problem if you're 7 feet
tall. That is sort of where I was thinking about this on Sunday, where he's matched up with Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid is maybe an inch or two taller than him, certainly much heftier than him. But he has no chance whatsoever. The Sixers won that game because they looked at Lauri Markkanen and said, we are going to make your life hell defensively. If it wasn't Joel Embiid doing something to him, it was Joel Embiid getting him to switch out onto James Harden. And James Harden, who is not what James Harden was, still just absolutely torches him.
Yeah. Lowry's playing drop, and it's just like you can run a pick. If you have a competent lob big, you can run pick and roll on him. You can post him up. And then on the offensive end, yes, he can space. Like, that is his value. And he's, to his credit, like, he's shot, his 3-point numbers are up the last, like, 15, 16 games. But you can't post him. A Lauri Markkanen poster, which the Cavs have decided to do a lot this year by, like, the standards that I would probably do it. You can't post Lauri Markkanen. They try to hunt. Like, I thought it was very funny that Caris LeVert was, like, kind of, like, came out and just said after a game, was like, yeah, you know, we stopped hunting the switches inside. And it was like, the guy you were hunting switches with was Lauri Markkanen. You were posting him on guards. He can't do that.
It's like watching Kristaps Porzingis try and post somebody up. Like that is why the Luka marriage with Porzingis didn't work in Dallas, is because Porzingis is a 7-foot guard that doesn't, he can't do big man things. And Lauri Markkanen is sort of like the dollar store version of that, I guess.
In terms of
skill set, or I mean, I guess calling him the dollar store Porzingis is an insult,
it's
because,
like,
he's not
like maybe like a Costco version.
Yeah, the Kirkland brand. I think that's dollar store is too harsh, and I don't mean it in that way. But it's kind of that similar skill set type thing.
I think the thing that makes me wonder what they do, that makes me feel like they can maybe get away with stuff that doesn't feel perfect, it's because I think the beauty of the two guys that are really the cornerstones here, in Garland and Mobley, and Allen can kind of just like fit whatever you need him to do. It kind of feels like if you're gonna, yeah, you know, play too big, as you're gonna have him play the five. Those guys are so malleable that I wonder if they decided, and it seems to me like it's if you look at what they've done with Markkanen and, you know, with maximizing the weight Kevin Love they have this year, and what they might do with Sexton or with LeVert or whatever, they've decided, okay, we have these two guys that we can do use in different ways. And Evan Mobley in particular is like, if he hits his ceiling and expands his game in the way you're hoping he does, he's going to be able to cover for some of this stuff. I do think there is just concern is that, like, if you're baking all of your success into Evan Mobley having to do everything, that's like probably, that's just not a way to persist 82 games. It's just hard to win that way. And to your point, I think, like, if you're banking on that solely, that's like kind of a tricky path to go down. I think we've seen the downsides of that. Even when Jared Allen has gone down, things change. Things drastically change once Jared went down.
Their margin for error is just, it's so slim because of that. Right? Like, one thing bad happens, it's all screwed. You have no margin for error. And I guess when you're a younger team, that's kind of how it is anyways. But it's still, I don't know if it's just the way to go for the future.
So if you were looking at a skill set, let's say, what is like the screaming need for this team?
I mean, it's a identify wing. They need a wing so bad. They need.
So what kind of wing?
In a perfect world,
is it like a 3-and-D wing? Is it a Brandon Ingram big creator wing? Is it Grant Williams hybrid wing? What kind of wing?
If I could clone Jaylen Brown and put him on the Cavs, I think the Cavs win a title in the next 3 years. I can't, but that's the type of guy that they need. They need somebody that can basically do everything, which we used to have a guy like that. He plays for the Lakers now. And I'm not saying you need a guy that good. If you could get the dollar store version of LeBron, like, that's the skill set you need. You don't need it at that high of a level. Obviously, the higher the level, the better. But that's the skill set that they so sorely miss.
I think Brown would have been, like, the fun training, mega trade option.
If things had really gone wrong there. Around, well, they were going wrong. We were having the conversation in December, like, should the Celtics split up the Jays, and all of us are screaming, yes, please. But obviously that is not the case anymore.
Yeah. I think the one in the summer that if you wanted the dream really big that I would call on, because that situation just could be weird, is probably Ingram. And he's not like get him to buy in defense.
Their turnaround hurt too.
Yeah.
Because now, I mean,
these guys are very hard to find.
Because they're good, and it's such a skill set. It's the skill set everyone wants.
So this leads me to, I think, like, if you can develop a guy that could become your Grant Williams,
sure,
that's where I think you could that I think guy might be sneakily, like, I think a spacer is going to be vital. Like, they just, unless if Mobley can develop a 3-point shot, I think it gives you a lot more room to kind of try different stuff out.
It does.
But if that doesn't happen to the degree where he's like a knockdown plus shooter that they, you know, sag off of, then I think you maybe need to go find, like, your kind of dirty work guy. Like, I don't know, like, if he'd be available or not, or, like, what their plan really is, but, like, I'd call in Jason Tate this summer. If you could get him for, like, some stuff, and sure, maybe you could pull him out of Houston. Like, that's the kind of guy, or, former Cavs legend Jeff Green, bring him back, have him play that, like,
Chris, when I
for
say,
a year, just a,
when I say
a year.
Dollar store LeBron, Jeff Green is the guy I think of.
If you could have him for a year while you develop someone you get in the second round, or you give yourself a year to find, like, a younger option or explore the trade market for Markkanen or and Jetty, whatever, like, the guy who could, like, play to the corners, hit threes there, maybe hit a couple above the break at a better clip than Okoro and Stevens. I think the problem is that, like, you just look at Okoro and Stevens being in the corner, and it's like you need someone else to shoot from the wing on the side. And that's where, like, can Sexton be, like, a guard version of what we're talking about? Can LeVert play to
become, I just think they need,
it's just
size.
He's small.
Yeah, like, they need someone that has a wingspan that's, like, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", and that's not who Colin is.
Which leads me to wonder, what can you potentially flip Jetty Osman for this summer? And what is the price attached to him to upgrade at the wing?
I don't think his stock is very high right now.
I don't think it is either, but if if you have to attach it yourself or something, and it's and that's like way to upgrade, I wonder what that might get you. Just because there's some salary relief end of his contract, there's some financial reasons. Like, could you? I don't know. There's just I would that would be the name if we're looking at like salary matching purposes and then attaching stuff to it. That's kind of what I think you're kind of left with, unless you're going to get someone in the draft or the mid-level exception. But the free agent market this summer is like, I don't know, it's not great, you know. And you're not going to go get like the biggest fish. You're certainly, I think, not like if you could. If you couldn't get some of the really high-end kind of older vets you might want to fill in for a year when you have LeBron, you're almost certainly not going to get them now.
Correct, yeah.
Right? Like, you're not going to get them to come at a discount now. Here's a name that I would be interested in, depending on what his price ends up being. Gary Harris.
I like that. I like Gary Harris. You know, I just – the way that it worked in Denver, I don't know that – that's who he's going to always be, because that situation was just weird with all the pieces that they had, right? Where that team had the Nuggets almost drafted too well, and in part because their superstar is a guy in Nikola Jokic that they selected 41st yep. overall. Like we talked about drafting and developing guys, that is the story of drafting and developing, where he's, you know, a one-time MVP that in a couple months we are probably referencing as a two-time back-to-back MVP. They drafted too well, and Gary Harris kind of was a victim of that, I would say, because Jamal Murray exploded, and they just kind of didn't need that.
He had a core injury that really kind of hammered him as well. And it's Orlando, but he's looked better. He's looked better in Orlando, to his credit.
But I do think that he's a guy that's worth taking that swing on. I don't know how much money. I don't know, you know, what it would look like, but I think he's worth it. He's worth exploring.
Let me give you one other name before we get out of here. He would have to turn on a player option from a team that could win the title this year and won the title last year, but he's improved as a shooter since last time he was a free agent. Maybe you try to throw him some of your mid-level money and front-load that contract. How would you feel about Pat Connaughton?
I don't know. I really liked Pat in college. I like those Notre Dame.
The
teams,
shooting is
the Notre Dame.
The shooting would just be such a plus.
It would be great. I don't know. And he has dealt with injuries throughout his career, which I think is something that is worth mentioning when you go through these type of exercises. He's not exactly had the cleanest bill of health. I do think Portland gave up on him a little too early on. But I also wonder how much of his shooting is a product of he has someone in Giannis that has such a gravitational pull that he's able to get more of those shots. And even Chris Middleton, too, where if he were to be in Cleveland next year, as much as I love Darius Garland, as much as I love Evan Mobley, neither one of those guys are going to have that type of gravitational pull next year that Giannis does. And I think that that could sort of deflate the value of a guy like Connaughton a bit.
The other thing that I would just say as we wrap up, I think what the Cavs do, whether it's like, you know, whether it's they go find a backup center, whether they try some of these wing options out, these might not be the sexy names. These are going to be names that have some risk. So if they end up with like Josh Okogie like ends up becoming UFA and they roll the dice on him, or
I would think that with the way that things have gone for Minnesota, I would bet Josh Okogie is going to hit the open market. I mean, he's sort of fallen out of the rotation there. He can't shoot, right? He's a strong enough, and he's smaller too. You know, Okogie's only 6'4". He's not a big wing at all. He's a smaller.
That's true.
He plays bigger than he is, and he's crazy athletic, but he's a smaller guy. And I will say,
sounds like the Cavs type.
Yeah, it does. You know, he's more of a two guard as opposed to a two wing, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I will say.
You would know. You did cover the Minnesota rules.
Josh is someone that would fit in the locker room. Like even and they're still a team that I follow closer than most others in the league. And, you know, he had to be reinserted into the rotation, I believe, over the past weekend. And just like what he's able to give the team in a quick notice type of role, I think is something that is valuable. But just his lack of ability to shoot, I don't know how much of an upgrade he would be over a guy like Lamar Stevens.
Yeah, I don't know. How they handle this will be fascinating. I cannot wait to find out. We'll have Danny back on, I'm sure, sooner rather than later to talk about all of this and much more. Danny, just tell everyone real quick where they can find all your stuff before we get out of here.
You can find me on Twitter at RealDCunningham, as it says right below my name over there. You can find me every night on 850 ESPN Cleveland, myself and Matt Fontana on ECT from 5 to 7. And I also have sort of turned into a columnist at WKYC. I write columns on the Cavs, the Guardians, the Browns when they call for it. I write about news, whatever they need me to do, I have been doing. So you can just find me everywhere, basically, Chris.
Yeah, go check out Danny's stuff. It's great. We'll be back. And Devin and I will be back Saturday morning to recap Cavs Nets. That game is so big, we have to recap it and break it all down because it's a massive game, and it's fun to have massive games talk about at the end of the season, if nothing else. But until then, I'm Chris. That's Danny. Be well.